It's going to be great. All right. Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Let's face it, in the Book of Mormon, there are many, many discussions about war. But is the Book of Mormon a pacifist text? We're going to find out why Dr. Christopher Thomas from the Pentecostal Theological Seminary came to that conclusion. He's the author of A Pentecostal Reads the Book of Mormon. And so we'll talk a little bit about his book. And he notes that in the exact center of the book is a pacifist story that you're all familiar with. So check out our conversation. Well, and I loved your book. I read the whole thing. You know, the first part, you kind of tell what's in the Book of Mormon, which for any Mormon, you know, we're like, well, yeah, I know that. I know all that. But I think you wrote it for people who had never read it, right?
Right. And in that section, you know, when I started rummaging around in the book, I noticed that nobody had paid attention really to the structure of the book.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
And so that's one of the things that I began to try to figure out. And I noticed those three sets of kind of chronological indicators that run through the book from the time Lehi leaves Jerusalem, then the period of the judges, then the prediction of Jesus coming. And what I discovered was, and a lot of people had seen those, but what I discovered was that if you lay them out, it takes you all the way through the narrative. Right. So as an outsider, that was one of the ways I could kind of get a hold of it. The role that Mormon and Moroni play in the preface kind of sets up the reader for their appearances throughout the text. And in terms of content, I was actually interested in what was in the book. And usually, I mean, I was speaking at the Church History Library once and on one occasion, and I said, you know, it's like you had a meeting here in Salt Lake and said, we're only going to talk about seven stories out of the Book of Mormon. And if I hear of the 2,000 stripling warriors one more time, I'm going to pull my hair out, right? Because it was a real kind of select thing that you normally got, and I was actually interested in what's in it.
Right. I remember one of the things that you did that really kind of caught me off guard, and I've never seen any Mormon do this, and so that's why I appreciated getting the outside perspective, was you didn't necessarily end each section at the end of a chapter or each. You know, sometimes you'd end it in the middle, and then you'd be like, and here starts a new structure. And I'd never seen anybody do that before. Can you talk about why you did that?
Yeah, I, as somebody trained in New Testament and Gospels, spent a lot of time in the Gospels, your eye gets trained for kind of literary markers. Mm-hmm. And so when I looked at, say, First Nephi, I noticed that there were these three occurrences of the phrase, and thus it is, amen, right? And I'm like, well, that's significant. But what I noticed when I read people talking about First Nephi was that they were kind of perhaps controlled by other interests than the literary markers. And so you get a lot of people that will see First Nephi as a two-parter, right? And I even read one scholar's work that used the "and thus it is, amen" as an argument for his two-part structure. And I'm like, well, what about the other one, right? And so when I used those literary markers, I found this structure where, you know, the first nine chapters basically talking about Lehi and his sons. Then chapters 10 through 14, Nephi promises that he's going to talk about his ministry, but the very first thing he talks about is Lehi again. And so it's that section where the reader sees Nephi becoming a spirit-led spokesperson, right? So then when we get to the end of 14, and thus it is, amen, then the next section really chronicles Nephi's leading from there on. And when I saw that, I was like, well, man, this thing's going to be a snap, right? I mean, this is easy to see if you're looking with the right eyes. They weren't, unfortunately, all that easy, but they all seem to reveal their own structure. And often, not always, but often, it kind of went along with that 1830 chapter division, you know, which are much larger, almost novel-like, right? And so, and then there were other things like 3rd Nephi, Mormon speaks on four different occasions, and there's this four-part structure to the book, to 3rd Nephi, and largely structured around how Mormon inserts editorial words at the end of each of these sections. And then there are bigger issues, like I was reading Alma, I was reading the 1830 edition, not an original, but, you know, right. The replica, and or I wouldn't be on Mormon's gospel tangents. And I'm reading along, and it's the story of the anti-Nephi Lehis.
Right.
Right. Did I get that right?
That's
anti-
right.
Nephi Lehis. And you know, that really moving story about pacifism.
Right.
After their conversion, their deaths, etc., and all the sort of reactions. And I'm in my study at home, and I'm reading it, and all of a sudden, I just noticed, man, this story looks like it's in the middle of the book. And so I did a page count in the 1830 edition, and it looked like it was. So then I wrote a buddy at BYU and said, hey, has anybody ever counted the words in the Book of Mormon? And he said, Chris, we count everything. Of course we've counted the words of the Book of Mormon. I said, well, can you send me the data? Man, that story's just about dead in the middle of the book. Now, a historical critic would say, oh, well, isn't that an interesting coincidence? But somebody paying attention to narrative, you know, being in the dead center of the book, that's theologically and literarily significant. And so in this book that's got these real, you know, I mean, it's like there's so many wars, you know, that, you know, and as a new reader, I'm reading and I'm thinking, no, not another bloody war, you know.
Right.
You have this kind of subtext that, you know, subverts that dominant theme, not just the Alma stuff, but you think about the words of Jesus. Right, and then you think about how that the anti-Nephi Lehis are kind of lifted up as models. I think it's in 3rd Nephi, and then in 4th Nephi, you got the golden age, you know, the 200 years, which you only get, I don't know, what, 8 verses about it or
yeah.
After all this. And then at the end, you know, Mormon is just kind of wore out from war, and he's like, listen, don't take up your swords against anybody unless God tells you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to know what the lay of the land is, and so the difference, I would say, in sort of a typical LDS knowledge of the Book of Mormon is, and my overview is, I tried to pay real attention to kind of the structural markers. And a friend of mine at BYU was reading the book, and he would say to me, and we would meet weekly over Skype, I think it was, and he would say to me, I knew you were wrong about such and such. And then I went back and read the text, but you were right, and it's what I had been told this meant that had kind of led me astray.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, one of my weaknesses is I don't know the tradition, and so I'm never sure if I'm, you know, if what I'm seeing is actually there. So I wanted to do that, and then I wanted to look at the kind of the theology of the book, not, you know, compared to the Bible, but, you know, what the theology of the Book of Mormon is.
Well, and I definitely want to go there in just one second, but since you mentioned the war, because I think a lot of people get tied up with that, and we all get tired of these wars, and so I think that's really a significant contribution to Mormon studies, that you've noticed this case of pacifism. One of the interesting things between the LDS Church and the Community of Christ, for those who don't know about the Community of Christ, it was founded on April 6, 1860, so 30 years to the day after Joseph Smith organized a church in New York. The Community of Christ was organized. And of course, that was on the eve of the Civil War. Mm. And so I know that some Community of Christ scholars like John Hamer and some other ones have said that the Civil War played a significant impact on Joseph Smith III.
Mm.
And if you look at the seal of the community, well, I guess I should say the RLDS Church, you can see this lamb and the lion mm-hmm. motif. And so this idea of pacifism that you've discovered in the Book of Mormon is much more significant in the Community of Christ, I guess, with the Civil War in the background, than it is in the LDS Church. And I think they emphasize pacifism much more than mm-hmm. the LDS Church. Do you have any comments on
well,
that?
Well, I think other people have noticed that story. But what, as far as I know, nobody did notice it, is that it's at the dead center of the book.
Right.
Which kind of, I've wondered what accounts for the relative militarism of the Utah Mormons
mm-hmm.
on the one hand, and the
we
pacifism.
We got Hill Air Force Base, I think.
That's right. and the pacifistic way that the RLDS turned out. And obviously, there's tons of stuff there. But it is interesting, isn't it, that a movement of common origins takes such different
right.
paths and different trajectories.
Well, and I know the Community of Christ, for those who haven't been to the temple in Independence, they have a prayer for peace every day at noon.
That's right.
And you can go there. I've been there when they did that. And they've got the Peace Plaza, I think they call mm-hmm. it, right there outside the temple. And it seems like they are much more focused on world peace than the LDS Church. I mean, we don't really give it much thought.
Yeah, and I think that it's not my place to comment on what these different churches should or shouldn't be doing, but no doubt the history of being on the other side of the Rockies plays into all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And just the antagonistic relationship with the government that the Utah Mormons lived through. And then the kind of transformation into kind of the American citizen, right? The Tabernacle Choir singing at the inaugurations. I don't know that you have quite a similar transformation in the RLDS Community of Christ. They seem to have gone in a different direction there. But I'm not an expert on the history of either. I just think that whole theme is one that is seems to be much more present in the Book of Mormon than people have.
Well, and even the Community of Christ has the town named after Lamoni.
Right.
They're really. And I, to some degree, to a large degree, it probably relates to the Civil War. But I think they tie into these themes much more strongly than the LDS Church does about peace and putting down your weapons of war.
Yeah, yeah.
The LDS Church, we've had the Mountain Meadows Massacre, we've had the fight the government over polygamy, and then I think really World War I and World War II, we said, okay, we're going to assimilate, we're going to be patriots, we're going to join the army, we're going to fight for the United States. Whereas in the Community of Christ, they were much more of conscientious objectors. Mm. No, we believe in peace. We don't want to enroll in these wars.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that it's been a lot more, the Community of Christ seems to have latched onto this Lamoni story and the anti-Nephi Lehi story much more than the Salt Lake Church.
And what's kind of significant to an outsider is it's Joseph Smith III, or Tripp as I refer to him.
Trip.
Triplet. Or the third.
Oh, I see.
It's his dad that gets killed, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, and you wonder if that in itself doesn't kind of bring you to an existential moment of how do you go on? I mean, they apparently people can always kill you, right? So I don't know. It's all very interesting to me. And of course, I had no idea any of that was in the Book of Mormon until I started reading it.
Right, right. Well, and I love that because you said it's right in the center of the book.
Yeah.
That's not been something that our church has noticed. We more focus on 3rd Nephi 11, with mm-hmm. Christ's appearance, which is 2/3 of the way. I don't know, but
I don't know the numbers that well.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Christopher Thomas. In our next conversation, Chris is going to talk about how he engages with LDS scholars.
Being where I'm located, there aren't too many people to talk about Book of Mormon scholarship. So one of the things, if you took a look at my diary, it's just full of lunches and dinners. You could probably tell that by looking at me, but conversations with folk that there's a real kind of high concentration of people who have done a lot of significant work on the Book of Mormon in Utah.
Right. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.